On this episode of Brains Bite Back, we sit down with Arjun Chander, co-founder and CEO of Industrial ML, an enterprise data management platform that uses real-time data integration, analytics, and more to communicate valuable information to factory stakeholders through the use of AI technology. We dive into some interesting stats you may be surprised to learn about the manufacturing industry, and he addresses a common concern surrounding the use of machine learning. Arjun also gives us a sneak peek into his latest project at MIT that's looking to tackle homelessness and environmental waste.
My name is Arjun Chander. I'm the CEO of Industrial ML and also a senior graduate student at MIT working in the Mintos group. So in those capacities, my company has built an enterprise software platform that does data integration, real-time communication and analysis using artificial intelligence for the manufacturing industry. And in my capacity at MIT, our group is working on 3D printing of homes, primarily towards the challenge of resolving homelessness. And my personal passion is in workforce education and development, and that's one of the through lines in both of those areas of work.
Amazing, Arjun. Thank you. From what I gather, you're a busy guy. You mentioned you're CEO of Industrial ML. You're currently working on like a very forward-thinking project at MIT. But I'd like to take a step back and kind of start from the beginning. How did the idea for Industrial ML come to life? I feel like I'm sensing like an interesting story here.
I worked in the aerospace industry for a couple of years, and also as a non-founder at a 3D printing startup called EnvyBots for a couple of years. And we sold 3D printers to manufacturing companies, and I obviously had plenty of operational experience in manufacturing. So I experienced firsthand a lot of the inefficiencies, in particular around how data is handled. Everybody talks about how data has become very cheap. You can collect tons of it, and that's great. But nobody really knew what to do with that data. And a big part of the reason why was that you could never get the information that the data provides out to the production floor quickly enough. And they're the ones who can actually do something in the midst of day-to-day operation with that data. So the idea for Industrial ML basically came out of that experience of wanting to find a way to take all of these great mathematical tools that we've developed over the decades and bring them to the plant floor in real time. And I think at the outset of the company, we probably had more of a sense that machine learning and artificial intelligence tools were the silver bullet, that if we could use those tools to deliver better insights to manufacturers, that would help them become more efficient. Through the process of actually having, built this along with, our development partner, One-to-One Holdings, which has steel tube companies in Japan and Vietnam, we came to understand that machine learning is a supplementary tool and a very powerful one, but it's not the be-all and end-all. What we came to understand is that getting information to the plant floor in real time, going back to what I originally saw as the problem to begin with, that's the critical thing. And you need to have the communication infrastructure to do that. Now, you can enhance that information using machine learning, but you need to have that infrastructure in place to get information to them in order to make any of that effective. And I think what's unique about our platform is particularly the fact that we have a real-time communication system for notifications and alerts.
And from what I understand, your software is mainly used in steel tube manufacturing factories. It sounds very niche. Could you use this elsewhere in other type of factories?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way our platform works is we gather data from a variety of sources, whether they're sensors, other software, video, audio. We have a pretty powerful analysis engine that can do calculations on the data we collect in real time. And that can be, basic statistics all the way up to real-time computer vision. So we can use algorithms to detect the probability of defects, and we can report those probabilities in real time. And based on not just the data, but that associated information, people can see information represented in dashboards. They can, and that's great. But more importantly, they get real-time notifications. So like if your welding current is trending too high, or if your probability of a visual defect is greater than 75%, then you'll get an alert. And that could go to a headset, that could go to a mobile device, that could go to Slack, that could go to email. And you know, depending on the medium that's best for the worker who can interact with it, they'll get instructions not only that this happened, but what to do to solve it. And nothing that I just described is unique to the steel tube industry. And in fact, it's not even unique to manufacturing. It's helpful for any environment where you depend on workers to perform tasks in some way, shape, or form. And the detection of when they need to perform the tasks and the transmission of instructions at the time that those tasks need to be performed, that's the real genius of the system.
I came across an interesting stat, and it was basically highlighting the fact that there's a higher turnover rate for people that work in manufacturing, like on the factory floors now, in comparison to our grandparents, our parents, when they worked, you know, in that industry. I'm curious how your software helps managers and, you know, new employees to train, be aware of, you know, the nitty gritty of the actual working environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think beyond just, you know, capturing errors at the point that they happen, the biggest value of our platform is that it can provide real time on the job training. Because, you know, what you read is accurate, and manufacturing is shifting away from a paradigm where people spend their entire careers there and closer to what a lot of the rest of the world is like. Younger workers. Deloitte did a study a couple of years ago, and they found that people who are ages 50 to 64, their average tenure in their current job is about 9.9 years, whereas it's under 3 years for people aged 25 to 34. And if people who follow that paradigm are becoming the dominant part of the workforce, then manufacturers basically have three things that they could do. They can try to automate away the work that, you know, people were doing and are now leaving their jobs for. They can try to provide better incentives to keep people in those jobs, but then they're going to be spending more money on an ever dwindling pool of workers. Or they can figure out ways to train them better, cheaper, and faster, so that, you know, as you experience worker turnover, which is inevitable on the current climate, you're better able to adjust to it. And being able to, you know, potentially use artificial intelligence to catch errors quicker and be able to transmit information quicker, but even more importantly, just having the infrastructure to communicate the information. It's a great way to make sure that someone could passively run a factory after, you know, 3 months on the job as opposed to 3 years on the job.
I wanted to share a startling number that I found online as well. It says that 3 million workers die every year due to work-related accidents and diseases. This is according to the International Labor Organization. It's very broad, but it goes on to list manufacturing as one of the most, you know, hazardous sectors. It brings attention to the challenges, obviously, in safeguarding, you know, the manufacturer, you know, the working environment.
Yeah.
From what I understand, your technology works to address that and make it a safer environment. How so?
Yeah, I think there are two things about our platform that are particularly conducive to improved worker safety. One of them is just because we're collecting a lot of data and we are able to generate real-time alerts based on that data, you don't necessarily have to have someone who's monitoring every piece of equipment, who can, you know, see when something is going wrong and be able to correct for it. They can get notifications, not only like when something is going wrong, but when it's trending in the wrong direction, even if it's not necessarily outside of its operating range yet. And that aside from just shutting the line down, it should improve worker safety when they're operating around any given piece of equipment. The second part of it is we are sending real-time worker instructions, and there is a portion of that which includes safety instructions. So, you know, if you're changing products from, you know, product A to product B, and there are a number of safety checks that you should be doing, we can actually gate it where we send safety work instructions and they need to be completed before you receive the instructions for the actual production process. Now, all of that, of course, is dependent on the people who use the technology having a commitment to worker safety and making sure that those safety checks are made before that they actually start production. But to the extent that that's a priority in the manufacturing environment, and you know, I mentioned our partners at One-to-One Holdings, it's absolutely a priority for them and something that they emphasize. We have the infrastructure to be able to help with that.
What I think is really cool is that basically you're providing the tool in order for them to do it, right? Which I think is, you know, a good start. Yeah. It makes it more efficient for them. It literally provides them the opportunity to make the working environments a lot safer. And you know what? The workers in factories are obviously the backbone, I feel, to an extent, of our society, because they're the ones creating the products that we use every day.
Absolutely.
What would you say, and we talked about this a little bit when we first chatted, about people's feelings that AI could step in and take over their jobs on the factory floors? How would you respond to them specifically?
I would say it's obviously a valid concern, because I think the way that a lot of people outside the plant floor think about AI is how it could replace their, you know, their workers who they don't have to pay anymore. But the reality is, I think we're close to a critical or carrying capacity as to how much jobs could really be automated away. We can't ever fully get rid of the critical thinking capability of humans. And frankly, automation is a very long and difficult process in a lot of manufacturing, especially because of the level that's already been achieved. So much of where I think artificial intelligence is going to help in the next 10 years is worker assist type technologies. And you know, I described what we have in our system. You know, if we're using machine learning to do computer vision, well, that could help you inspect 100% of your parts, but we're not replacing a human inspecting 100% of parts, because humans might inspect anywhere from 20% to like only 2% of the actual products that get made. So making it 100% just literally makes the job easier for people who are doing manual inspection, because they can target what they're inspecting physically instead of having to do that at a random point. And I think, you know, more importantly, I talked about how we're sending instructions in real time. We're not taking away the need for humans to do the job. We're just making it so that more people can passively do the job. And I think from the manufacturer side, it's important to be able to account for turnover. But from the worker side, this also means that they can pick up skills a lot more quickly. And versatility is the most valuable commodity in the modern workforce. So
it's a very good point.
You know, helping them gain literacy in a new tech and unfamiliar technology really quickly, I think is really, really valuable for them.
I think headlines don't always help.
Yeah.
They kind of add that to that fear mongering in the sense of people thinking that, oh, the robots are going to take over. But at the end of the day, a lot of what AI is doing is picking up a lot of tedious tasks, allowing workers to focus on something that could be more relevant to their job.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to shift focus here, you know, with the little time that we have left. You're working on a very interesting project at MIT. You know, what's in the works?
Yeah. So at a high level, our group's work at MITHouse, it started with one of my good friends and colleagues, AJ Perez. He had a very, very crazy idea that, hey, people are starting to 3D print homes. What if we could actually account for the cost constraint to make it possible to counter the challenge of homelessness through additive manufacturing. And you know, he got laughed out of rooms when he first suggested this, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But he's a persistent individual, and he stuck with the idea. And you know, we've now built the group to about 20 people. A lot of what we've been doing up until this point has been proving that we can make foundations and other designs around a home out of added manufacturing, and that these are going to stand up to housing standards. And that's basically what AJ was able to prove for a foundation for his thesis. Now we're working in a couple of different areas around the 3D printing technology itself, extrusion, material recycling, because we'd love to also solve the sustainability problem and maybe make this out of recycled water bottles all over the world instead of needing to ship plastic everywhere.
Killing two birds with one stone, basically, in a way.
Yeah. So extrusion, the actual 3D printing process, material recycling, and design of structures. So floors, walls, roofs, all of that. I think the project itself has a much grander scope, though. And both AJ and our principal investigator, Dave Hart, agree with that. There, if we were to think about the entire scope of everything that's possible if you can 3D print a home at a really low cost, there's supply chain considerations, there's technology and policy considerations, working with various, you know, national and local governments about regulations. There's the potential of setting up micro factories or perhaps even having mobile 3D printing services. There's workforce development and training, and you know, as you've gathered, that feeds into my passion for the project. There's, you know, transportation considerations and all of that, that entire system. Mapping that is a big part of what I'm interested in my research as well. Because, you know, any one node can influence the others. And so the crux of the group's work has been, you know, mainly on the technology side so far. But as we grow, looking at the entire system, every node of a very interdisciplinary process is going to become, you know, much more prevalent.
Yeah, because I imagine you have to look at the regulation side of things. Because you'd mentioned this is not, I guess the idea is unique because there's the sustainability factor, 3D printing of these homes. But other people, people in the past have tried to tackle this issue specifically. But your team or a team of experts that are coming in from every angle, and you're coming in with the knowledge of, you know, working in the manufacturing industry specifically.
And I think at our highest aspiration, we're helping to solve the problem of tons and tons of plastic waste that get generated, you know, every single year. We're able to provide a low-cost alternative for dignified housing, so we can, you know, attack the crisis of homelessness and underhousing all over the world. And we can figure out a way to generate jobs for people who might work to produce these homes in those local areas. And I think that, you know, it's obviously a very ambitious vision, and it's going to require a lot of help outside of just our group to realize that fully. But I can't think of a more worthy endeavor that I've ever been a part of.
It sounds awesome. Congratulations, Arjun. Before I let you go, is how can people reach out to you? What would be the best way of getting in contact?
Yeah. So you can reach me at info@industrialml.com. And if you're curious to hear more about the Mithaus project through, you know, the lens of the people who are leading it, I can also put you in touch with AJ Perez and Dave Hart. I think the best way to reach AJ is probably his Gmail, which is alfonsoperezmit@gmail.com. And yeah, we're happy to pick up the discussion from there.
Amazing. I'll make sure to include all that in the link below. We appreciate your time and effort. Best of luck in the future. And we hope we can have you on again to talk about maybe the process of the project at MIT. Thanks again,
Andrew. Absolutely.
Take care.
Thanks.
That's a wrap for today's episode. If you've benefited from what you've learned today, feel free to leave us a review on iTunes. You can also find all our past and future episodes on YouTube and Spotify under Brains Bite Back. And if you'd like to connect with us directly, you can always reach out to us by email at info@sociable.co. Remember, your feedback helps us grow. We welcome it. We appreciate you joining us. Until next time.